We are interrupting this program to bring you a special message from the Women's Army.
Vstopamo v novo dobo vladavine ženske. Iz sence na sonce, iz ozadja v ospredje. Kiborginje v morju strojno medijskega šuma. Svečenice utopično realne njenje. Moderne misleče kraljice vsakdana. Naseljujemo prihodnost z drzno družbeno iznajdljivostjo in dodajamo novo vrednost multikulturnim in nadžanrskim sentimentom. Vsak prvi četrtek v mesecu, o 9:30, samo v oddaji Sektor Ž.
Januarja smo obiskale Librerijo delle Donne v Milanu, kultno feministično knjigarno in kulturni prostor, ki neprekinjeno deluje že od leta 1975. Ustanovila jo je skupina približno ducat žensk iz različnih družbenih in poklicnih okolij. Sredstva so zbrale z donacijami in prodajo umetniških del članic ter tako ustvarile prostor namenjen branju, analizi in širjenju literature žensk, ki se je razvijal v dialogu s feminističnimi teorijami in praksami, zlasti z italijanskim feminizmom razlike. V zaodrju knjigarne smo se srečale s tremi sogovornicami, ki nas bodo v današnjem sektorju Ž popeljale skozi zgodovino, zapuščino in sedanjost milanske prakse samo ozaveščanja. Ta poudarja potrebo žensk po avtonomnem prostoru za izražanje lastnih izkušenj in že od začetka zavrača zahteve po zgolj družbeno-formalni enakosti. Od rimskega ali torinskega feminizma se je torej razlikoval po tem, da se ni oblikoval znotraj marksističnih, delavskih ali institucionalnih političnih okvirov, temveč skozi simbolno in filozofsko refleksijo ženskega subjekta. Kljub pogostim kritikam pri tej tradiciji ustraja tudi 50 let pozneje. Najprej bomo prisluhnile Renati Sarfati, prevajalki in soustanoviteljici ženske knjigarne v Milanu, ki bo spregovorila o začetkih svoje feministične poti.
Quando ho incontrato il femminismo,
s feminizmom sem se srečala leta 1967. Bila sem študentka, politično angažirana, čeprav danes teh oblik udejstvovanja ne bi znala natančno opredeliti. Prva knjiga, ki mi je skoraj po naključju prišla v roke, je bila The Feminine Mystique, Betty Friedan. Ko sem se o njej pogovarjala s prijateljico, sva rekli, ta knjiga res spremeni pogled. Predramila je ustaljeno konstrukcijo ženskosti. To je bila moja izhodiščna točka. Na to sem spoznala Lio Cigarini, ki je bila prijateljica mojega brata in tako smo začele s skupinami za samo ozaveščanje. Mislim, da se je prva imenovala Demistifikacija patriarhalne avtoritete. Že pred knjigarno, ki je nastala leta 1975, so se ta srečanja odvijala v skupinah. Samo ozaveščanje je bilo zame in za druge nekaj izjemnega. Bilo je nekaj novega, govoriti o sebi. Soočati se z drugimi, izreči tudi neprijetne stvari, stvari, ki jih je okolica pogosto označevala kot nezaželene. Prav skozi govorjenje je nastal zelo bogat material za preobrazbo, frustracije. Negotovosti, ki smo jih prej zadrževali v sebi, so postajale nekaj drugega. V tistih letih je bilo v Italiji veliko političnih gibanj, vrenje in ogromna energija. Hočem reči, zgodovinski kontekst je zelo pomemben. Naša srečanja so se pogosto končala ob 2 zjutraj, naslednje jutro pa smo morale v službo ali opravljati druge obveznosti. Bilo je resnično očarljivo, bilo je ogromno navdušenja, velika napetost, zagon. Proti koncu leta 1975 smo prešle na skupine, ki so raziskovale nezavedno. Nekatere smo že obiskovale psihoanalizo, zato smo v prakso samozaveščanja vključile tudi psihoanalitične pristope, saj je praksa seksa segala globoko, v psiho, družinske odnose in življenje nasploh. Na neki točki smo si rekle, da bi poleg besed rade ustvarile tudi nekaj konkretnega. Ne samo govoriti, ampak se preizkusiti v skupnem podvigu. V Parizu smo že poznale pionirsko žensko knjigarno založbo in zelo lepo trgovino. Povezale smo se z vidnejšo skupino za psihoanalizo in politiko in od tam se je porodila ideja, da odpremo svojo. Bilo nas je 15. Šle smo k notarju in ustanovile smo društvo. Hkrati so se po vsej Italiji začele odpirati knjigarne in založbe, ki so izdajale ženske avtorice. V Firencah, Rimu, drugod. Mi smo se odločile, da bomo prodajali izključno knjige, ki so jih napisale ženske. V Parizu so prodajali tudi moške avtorje, mi pa smo želele poudariti vrednost ženskega pisanja. Takrat so bile pisateljice, tudi zelo cenjene, kot je Jane Austen, pogosto obravnavane kot literatura za dekleta ali gospodične, ki iščejo le moža, kot nekakšna drugorazredna literatura, če tudi je bila njihova kakovost priznana. Zato smo se odločile, da bomo znane in manj znane pisateljice enakovredno vrednotile in priznale vse ženske, ki so delovale pred nami. In tako se je začela naša pot, ki je segla tudi na simbolno raven. Z veliko strastjo smo iskale pisateljice, brale njihova dela, jih recenzirale, sestavljale sezname najljubših knjig. To je bila zares izjemna izkušnja.
E anche lì è stata un'esperienza straordinaria il fare quella cosa.
Traudl Zatler je leta 1982 iz Heidelberga prišla v Milano in tam prav zaradi aktivnosti knjigarne tudi ostala. Prisluhnimo njenim izkušnjam. Kaj se je dogajalo v libreriji v 80-ih in kako se je milanski feministični diskurs razlikoval od tistega, ki ga je poznala doma?
I used to work in a German women's bookstore in Heidelberg. And so when I arrived in Milan, I thought, oh, nice, that's great, there's a bookstore like in Heidelberg. And I thought to continue my job, it was not a real job, it was a volunteer job in Heidelberg as it was here. And but everything was very different. First of all, when I arrived, I saw there are women between 20 and 70 years old. In Heidelberg, we were a collective of students. We were all equal. We had the idea that everybody had to do the same things in the bookstore. This was the idea of sisterhood. We are all sisters. We are all equal. And I arrived here in the bookstore, and I was so surprised. There were women of all generations. And not only a visual impact, but they even theorized female genealogy. It was very important to speak about female genealogy, not only in the reality of that group I found there, but they looked for female authors who could be their mothers, the symbolic mothers. Indeed, they had already realized a big research about women writers, and they had published the yellow catalog, yellow because of the color of the cover, and the title was The Mother of Us All, and the mothers should be the writers. This is a title of Gertrude Stein, I think, The Mother of Us All, but they put it in the plural, The Mothers of Us All, and the mothers should be the writers, the female writers. And it was a very experimental way to deal with literature. It was not literature critique, but they said, we want to find female words in the past. We want in these literature works, we want to find something which human culture doesn't know yet about female difference. And so they put took the authors, they mixed their lives with the lives of the characters of the romances, of the novels. And this was a very interesting way to deal with literature. But in the real work, they always looked, they observed the relationships between themselves, what happens between us. And there was a very big discussion what authors they should choose to deal about in this catalogue. And there was somebody who defended Jane Austen, another one Ingeborg Bachmann, and so on. And at one point, one woman said, but the mothers are not the authors. The mothers are here between us, among us, because we are not all equal. And this was like a shock for everybody, that women should not be equal, because also here there was the idea of sisterhood and all the women are equal, because equally oppressed. And if you take away the idea of oppression and of discrimination, you see that there are big differences between women. It was said, it was written, we are not all equal. And it was not easy to deal with discovering, no? Because there is no social relationship between women which is seen in the society of when you hear there is a disparity between women, so you think there's hierarchy, there's power, and but here the women tried to see the disparity between women out of this logics of hierarchy and power. The interesting point was that many of the women here had experiences with psychoanalysis. And they even brought the ideas of psychoanalysis, of the sessions they had outside with the analyst, into the political work with women. This changed many things, because they would ask themselves, which are our inner contradictions, which are our desires. And so they published, when I arrived, they had just published a pamphlet, we can say, a paper, which was called Sotto Sopra Verde, upside down. Sotto Sopra means upside down. And it was called Verde Green because of the colors of the titles, of the letters of the titles. And this, for me, it was a kind of revolutionary thinking, because they wrote, it's not longer a matter of discrimination. Let's talk not about discrimination, but about female desire. And this was a kind of symbolic revolution for me. And I said, oh, wow. It was hard to understand everything when I arrived, but I saw this is a really fascinating and interesting point of view, and I will stay here. I want to understand what they are meaning. And so my old feminist view of the world was put like upside down with that Sotto Sopra, because no more victimism. So if we go out of the role of victimism, this victimism, and think about our desire, this will change the world for us. We discovered that there was already a word for this. If another woman has something which I would like to have, there is one word, which is envy. But envy is a very destructive feeling. And so I say, if I have envy, the other one will destroy me and I don't exist. But if I give a new interpretation of envy, I can call it an awakening of desire. So if I feel envy, so this means I want something. I realize that I have a desire. And so how can I bring my desire into the world? Maybe with a relationship with a white woman who has the thing I want to have. And we called it entrustment. Affidamento in Italian. So maybe this woman can help me to bring out my desire in the world. And but I need to trust her. That's why we called it entrustment. So this became a practice, an everyday practice in the bookstore. this relationship of affidamento. Because the interesting thing in Libreria is we are not really a collective, a group, but it's a network, like a network of dual relationships. And that's why it works so well for so many years. Because every woman here has some very good relationship to one, to two, not to everybody. And this is very important. So we don't accept any writing of any woman who comes here, no? Because it's very important when we recognize the disparity between women to accept also a judgment of another woman. It's not so easy, but if I choose the other one whom I trust, so I accept that she will help me and that my writing will be better in this discussion. It is a very efficient practice, this relationship between women, and to give value to each other. For instance, in my job as a teacher, and I see it also in our women who work, it's like a defense against male power. If a boss makes me a proposal, and I say, yes, just let me talk about with my colleague about your proposal. So he can't take me as something, as one woman, and he has the power over me. But I always show, and I say it public, in the public, that I relate to my colleague. And I do it even in the meetings at the university and so on. I always refer in the public to another colleague. And so this means that I give value to another woman and I show it. It's very important to show it, I think. We wrote here, it has a title, Don't Believe to Have Rights. This was against the feminism of revendications. You claim rights from the state. You say, oh, we are poor women, we need some more laws, another law, and then another law, and then another law again, because it's never sufficient. It's never enough. We discovered that no law can ever give the self-confidence a woman lacks. And so this is the most important thing, to give value to each other instead of saying the state has to give us value, has to give value to a woman. Maybe we are the first ones to have to give value to another woman. We can't ask from the state something we ourselves are not able to do.
Podrobneje o praksi samozaveščanja in psihoanalizi bo znova spregovorila Renata Sarfati. Izhaja iz skupinskega premišljevanja osebnih izkušenj, iz katerega se oblikuje politična zavest. Opisala bo, kakšno vlogo sta imela ta dva pristopa pri njenem dojemanju same sebe in svojih odnosov v družbi.
Allora era l'inconscio, uno strumento di conoscenza.
Takrat je bilo nezavedno po Freudovem načelu orodje spoznavanja. V Italiji smo ga šele odkrivali, saj zaradi fašizma, vojne in vsega, o čemer prej ni bilo dovoljeno govoriti, to prej ni bilo mogoče. Šele konec 50-ih in v 60-ih smo začeli govoriti o psihoanalizi. Brale smo Freuda, veliko Lacana, ogromno smo študirali in se poglabljali. Psihoanalitično orodje je skupaj samo zaveščanjem postalo ključno za temeljite prevrate. Jaz in pravzaprav vse mi smo se korenito spremenile, naši odnosi, način bivanja, način gledanja na svet. To je bil zame izjemen proces, nekaj, kar je trajno oblikovalo moje življenje. Takratna psihoanaliza je bila bistveno drugačna kot danes. Feminizmu je pomagala do te mere, da mu je odprla tematiko pravic in protestov. V Italiji so že obstajala gibanja za osvoboditev žensk. Pojavile pa so se tudi nove ideje ameriških feministk, kot sta Kate Millett in Phyllis Chesler. A feminizem, ki se je osredotočal na proteste, pravice in zahteve, za nas ni bil dovolj. Italija je že imela dobro ustavo, ki je veliko omogočala. Če bi se res izvajala, novih zakonov ne bi bilo treba stalno sprejemati. Za nas je bila prava sprememba osebna, v relaciji do drugega. Sprememba je bila epohalna preobrazba, ki ni bila le politična, ampak tudi globoka eksistencialna izkušnja. Spreminjale smo se same in preobrazili so se naši odnosi z drugimi. Ločitev, ki sem si jo želela, ni bila posledica feminizma. Sprejela sem jo, ker moj zakon ni bil srečen. To sem spoznala zelo zgodaj, a zaradi občutka krivde, imela sem hčerko, nisem mogla takoj ukrepati. Naučiti se ločiti in to storiti zavestno, brez popolne raztrganosti zaradi krivde, je bila zame prva velika preizkušnja. Pomagala mi je tudi pri odnosih z otroki. Vedno sem jih jemala seboj na srečanja in na aktivnosti. Moj sin je bil in je ostal bolj vključen kot moja hči. Odnos z njim je drugačen, saj ni imel klasičnega fantovskega življenja. Spoznal je moje prijateljice in ohranil trajne socialne vezi, saj so prihajale k nam domov. Ta moja sprememba je povzročila nekaj težav, ker moji prijatelji in sopotniki sprva niso razumeli, zato se nisem več redno družila z nekaterimi ljudmi. Kljub temu so tudi moje prijateljice iz tistega časa, ki niso bile del feminističnega gibanja, močno občutile vpliv te moje izkušnje. Pogovarjala sem se z njimi, spremenila svoj odnos do njih in tudi one so pridobile nove načine gledanja na stvari, nove načine bivanja. Postopoma je bil moj feminizem sprejet v družbi. Pomembno je prepoznati svoje želje, najprej v lastnem telesu, nato v tem, kar si želiš v življenju. Ugotoviti, kje se želja pojavi v odnosu do drugega, ne pasivne želje drugega, ki postane tvoja, kot se pogosto zgodi pri moških. Prevzameš nekaj kot svojo željo, a to ni želja, ki je usklila v tebi. Prepoznati lastne želje ni lahko, to je temeljna želja, del tebe, del tvojega telesa.
Tu devi essere capace, perché riconoscere i propri desideri è difficile, non è facile.
Preden slišimo mlajšo uporabnico librerije, smo Renato in Travdal vprašali, kaj vidita kot svojo zapuščino in s kakšnimi izzivi se ta sooča danes.
I can't say one word. Freedom. The freedom, la libertà femminile, mia libertà.
Moja svoboda se je prenesla naprej in vidim jo pri mladih ženskah. Moja nečakinja, ki je stara 25 let, je feministka, a na svoj način. Čutim, da ta svoboda še ni popolnoma dozorela, a vseeno vpliva na njo in na druga dekleta. Najpomembnejše, kar spuščam v zapuščino, je torej notranja svoboda.
Le sue amiche e altre ragazze come loro, non so. Che questa libertà, credo che sia la legacy, most important legacy is the freedom.
Mm-hmm. Even our grandmothers were looking for freedom and we find the struggle for freedom in the history, even in middle age and so on. So I don't think that you can see the human history as a continuous progress for better life for women and because the freedom is never guaranteed, never. But we could say in 1996 we published a paper, Patriarchy is Over. And this was a kind of provocation for many people because they said, well, our patriarchy is over. No, there's so much violence. And we saw that patriarchy is over if we see that there is a female freedom and patriarchy is over in that sense that it doesn't exist anymore as a kind of natural order which organizes the women's life. And it seemed like that before. And I think every woman all over the world knows that patriarchy is over in the sense that they know that women's freedom exists. Because yeah. Patriarchy is no more the natural order as it seemed before. And so this kind of provocation we formulated, I think it's real. I think we are now in a post-patriarchal disorder. Patriarchy also meant that there was a very strong father who was controlling the sons, no? The undisciplinated sons. And this father disappeared. We know because also in the psychoanalysis, they say that the father has disappeared.
Society that without the fathers.
Uh-huh. In that paper, The Patriarchy is Over, we also wrote, there was a quote of Julia Kristeva, and she said, women have nothing to laugh about when the symbolic order is collapsed, or mm-hmm. is collapsing. Mm-hmm. And that's a reality today.
Za ženske je to lahko velika priložnost. Ko se vse podre in nastane praznina, je treba, odvisno od okoliščin, ukrepati. Pred nami je pogovor z Michelo Risi, študentko političnih ved in mednarodnih odnosov na Univerzi v Milanu ter eno od mlajših uporabnic librerije. V nadaljevanju bo pojasnila, zakaj jo je pritegnila prav ta struja feminizma, ki med mlajšimi generacijami morda ni tako popularna.
First of all, they study and they recognize themselves in the feminism of sexual difference. And I'm learning about that because I've always like studied feminism and the way they recognize themselves in this specifically type of feminism. For me, it was new, but it really resonated with me personally. So I'm really finding I'm very well in this place. It's not something that I'm not feeling like outside. Of course, I am learning new things. Sometimes I feel very not out of place, but I have to learn. But it's the perfect place to learn about women, sexual difference, feminism, and so on. I'm learning about the practice of starting from ourselves, from our experiences. It's important for us, even for like, I'm not the youngest, but I'm one of the younger ones. So starting from our own experience, because our own experience is like valid, it's important, our past, our thoughts, and the authority that we give in each one. It's something that I'm really taking outside of this place, that's for sure.
Let's go maybe deeper into what does it mean for you to be a feminist of 25 and identifying to a certain point to feminism of sexual difference?
We first, as young women, we listened first about feminism, maybe on social media, so on Instagram. And it's a very distorted context. It's not a very good tool to start to study feminism in any way. So we see like women who doesn't shave themselves, which is absolutely important and fundamental, but it's not really the only thing that makes you a feminism, you know. So I'm learning here about what mm-hmm. women created, why women created certain things, a specific point to view like life, relationships, that women need relationships with other women, and then of course with men. So I'm starting to understand that all the things that we see like on Instagram, on social media, is not enough, of course, for me, because I'm like in this place, but even for other girls who are even younger than me, like 21, they are coming here and they see, oh my God, I'm seeing that this type of feminism, like study with women, stay with women, the women have their way to live, that is not recognized, that is different, like unique even, and Instagram is not enough. Like even younger women are recognizing these things. So this place it's becoming very necessary for us.
How would you see this aspect of digital promotion of certain ideas that are sometimes only disguised by feminism and not necessarily really having the deeper thoughts and deeper movement behind them?
The women that I'm with, that are my friends, they maybe agree with the feminism, like the Instagram feminism, but at a certain point I understand that it's only superficial. It's a feminism that cannot stay with you for like a long time, a long life period, you know. At a certain point you feel the urgency to go deeper. The relationship with other women, it's fundamental. Like you understand yourself with around them. We discuss articles on a Tuesday, Thursday evening. We read what other women wrote and are writing. And so I think it's an idea, the feminism on Instagram, you know. You think that you have to compromise with that type of feminism. And so that it's only like, sometimes even solely physical, but it's not mental, you know. You have to read, you have to write. That's what I'm understanding here. Write your experience, write your feeling. It's a practice. It's not only a thing that you see and you put on your body, I don't know. It's a practice.
What do you do when you come to Libreria? How does it look life in mm-hmm. Libreria among other women, and also maybe in this sense, something about your writing?
The first thing that I do here is listen, of course. Then when I'm asked to, I talk. And then, of course, I'm writing. Like, I write about how I feel here, why I came here, what changed inside me when I'm here. So it's really a place, not only for me, but there are even people who maybe have not the possibility to come here at every event or reunion or something, but they can write on the magazine that La Libreria has. So it's really an opportunity for every woman, but also for, I would not say every man, but some men, to write on the site or on the magazine. So thing that I really like is knowing that maybe some of these women read something that I wrote and they like it, or maybe they tell me to maybe correct something, to go deeper in my thoughts. And maybe, I don't know, even I felt embarrassed at first, but then if they ask me, I feel like empowered to write about it. So it's really anyone who likes to write about women or your own experience. Of course, it has to like have it has to do something with your experience in this life as a woman. Let's say you can write about a thoughts that you don't know if it's valid or not, but another woman gives you the certainty that it's valid because you thought about it, it's your perception, it's something that you're thinking about it, and it's good, it's necessary that you write that because it can help other women.
Who do you address as a writer, as a woman, when you are part of Libreria? Who is your audience, or who would you like to be your audience?
The first person is me. Because sometimes I write and then I reread the things that I write, that I wrote, and it's really, I understand what I wrote, but after a long time maybe. So the first one is me. Being here, it's not that you come here and you understand it all, you know how it works, because it's a development, it's never done, even the shop is always evolving, the reunions, first of all, because new people are coming, ideas are coming back and forth, so it's natural that everything evolves. So the first person is me, and then other women, of course. The older ones, maybe the new ones, they have never been here, but maybe they wrote something, they read something about me that I wrote, and they resonate with it, with my words, and so they think, oh, that could be a good place to return to eventually.
And how would you say that your life in Libreria shapes the relationships outside of Libreria? So how does it changing the way you are in the world beside mm-hmm. this safe space that you created here?
First of all, here they talk about even worse, of course, right now. So, but in another way, like women even are part of the worst that never found a space, for example. So in my study, I really think that this space completed my, of course it's never finished, but they completed my studies. And of course, I would love to see some of these women, or even to take the university here, because I think even professor needs to know what happens here. It would complete even their career, I would say. I wouldn't say to take the Libreria there, because it's a place that I think would ruin the authenticity of this place, but to take the university outside and to like maybe bring some professor here, or new younger students, I don't know. Giordana Masotto, who is one of the founder of La Libreria, said in an occasion that every time she exits this place, she felt radiant, she felt stronger. So this is how I feel sometimes. Even when I'm like alone in the street, I always think about that I have this place, so I feel strong. I feel that I have a safe place to, and women to talk to about something that happens like on the street or at home or something like this. So it's really important, even psychologically, to know that there is this place in this city. It's sometimes a very complex city, so for women even. So it's important.
How is Milano for women? Because you said it's a complex city. I would say every city is a complex city, but it's a complex in a particular way. What is the place of libreria in Milano, and what is the place of women here? I mean, your experience, of course, here in Milano.
I would say that in Italy in general, but then Milan is a city that embrace all the complexity of Italy, because we have the richest people in Italy and then the poorest. So it's a very exacerbate of the good things and the bad things. But for women in particular, we can see Milan, but even in Italy, our prime minister is a woman, not a feminist, but she's a woman. So we can see women in a very consolidated position at work, but on the mainstream area of their, like, at work. But on our everyday life, women are still afraid to and scared to walk at night in the streets. Maybe the fear is not always like a true one, in a sense that Milan is not as dangerous as, like, newspaper pictures this city. But the perception is real. So women are scared to work at night, for example. The house is still one of the dangerous place for women to live. So on the mainstream, women are very, they say, have a very strong role, like in the economic companies, in the financial sector. But in our everyday life, women are scared of walking alone. The house is very dangerous. Then there are even some other strong stereotypes that are getting even more stronger. And women sometimes can have some difficulties in leaving a relationships, and then eventually we see, for example, last day they have been killed by the husband, ex-partner, partner, whatever. So it's very hard. Like, I would like to see, like, women that are, of course, strong, they earn money, big money, but these things has to, like, come down to the, like, the basic need of women are not met. That's dangerous, I would say. So,
kljub mnogim spremembam in prizadevanjem so osnovne potrebe žensk še vedno omejene. Zato smo tudi 50 let po italijanskih ženskih uporih še vedno ogrožene, zaključuje Michela Risi. V blagem duhu besa in ponavljajoče se nemoči vsakič na svoj način, sektor Ž zaključujemo ipak zaupajoče. Izkušeno Renato Sarfati smo vprašale, zakaj se danes splača boriti.
Che la cosa più importante sarebbe che
Najpomembnejše je, da ženske, politika žensk in način, kako se vključujejo v politiko moških, prinesejo svoj način političnega delovanja in s tem prispevajo k civilizacijskemu preobratu. Ženske, ko se ukvarjajo s politiko, lahko ob razpadu patriarhata, ki ga vidimo skozi vse te grozljive stvari, ki se dogajajo, ostanejo potrpežljive in korakajo naprej. Tako ženske, ki dosežejo politično moč, ne delujejo le kot nosilke prevladujoče moči, temveč kot tiste, ki so sposobne upeljati politiko žensk v širšo politiko in resnično spremeniti tok dogajanja. Tukaj v knjigarni smo o tem veliko razmišljale in se pogovarjale. Zdaj, v tem tako tragičnem trenutku, si trije veliki plenilci želijo prisvojiti v svet. Kako prelomiti ta vzorec, ne vem, a delo mnogih se že kaže v protestih. Tu mi ustvarjamo majhen prostor, a če se ta razširi, morda imamo priložnost. V tem trenutku si ne znam predstavljati nič drugega. Zame je to zdaj najbolj nujno in najpomembnejše.
To je la cosa più importante, più incombente per noi tutti.
Librerija delle donne ostaja redek primer prostora, ki ustraja pri počasni, odnosni in simbolni politiki, tudi ko se svet okoli nje vse bolj ravna po logiki vidnosti in merljivih učinkov. Prav ta zvestoba lastni tradiciji je njena nosilna značilnost, hkrati pa tudi točka tveganja. Vprašanje, koliko je tak feminizem danes prehoden onkraj svojih zgodovinskih in generacijskih okvirov, terja razmislek za vsako posebej. Morda pa prav v napetosti med kontinuiteto in prenosom na mlajše generacije tiči razlog, da librerija še vedno deluje kot prostor aktivnega mišljenja, ne le kot spomenik. Knjigarno je obiskala Andreja, oddajo je tehnicirala Oli, lektorirala je Lana, brala sem Tisa Neže.
Sektor Ž. Oddaja o feminizmu s feministkami za feministke. Vsak prvi četrtek v mesecu ob 9:30.